It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Gene Purcell in for Veronica Rickert. Coming up on Central Time, after a massive oil train explosion in Canada last year and four others in the U.S. in recent years, an investigative journalist shines a light on the dangers of transporting crude oil by rail.
But first, 2014 was a big year in politics and for campaign spending here in Wisconsin.
Although there are no major partisan elections in 2015, we do have a Supreme Court election to look forward to in Wisconsin, and we could see some cash flying there as well.
For a look back at the year in money at the Capitol and beyond, we've invited Bill Leaders. He's the money and politics editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, which collaborates with Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill, thanks for joining us again.
Good to be here.
Well, 2014, obviously a big year in Wisconsin politics, governor's race, among other things. We know how the vote totals came out, but what struck you when it came to money and spending trends in Wisconsin politics this year?
Well, I think there were two broad trends in electoral spending, and they sound almost contradictory, but one trend is that the process is awash in money. There's just millions and millions of dollars that are poured into the political process, into all races, and even into races where there aren't competitive elections. In Congress, for instance, we saw well more than $20 million spent on congressional races, more than ever before for Wisconsin congressional races, even though there weren't any competitive races among them. In the governor's race, it was the highest spending regular governor's race in Wisconsin history. Easily $60 million was spent by the candidates and by other groups. So there's this huge amount of money, and it flows into these races, competitive or not. It seems almost indiscriminate. Mm-hmm. The other trend, which sounds almost contradictory, is that there is more precise, targeted, deliberative spending, where groups will pick a particular contest that they identify as winnable because it's close, and direct money to that. We saw that in some key state assembly races where some Democrats were identified as vulnerable. They were in districts that were somewhat competitive in terms of the political balance. There aren't a lot of those districts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was able in April of last year, before candidates even had to file whether they were running for reelection or challengers even had to declare that they were in the race, I was able to predict that the Republicans would retain control of both houses of the state legislature and possibly increase their gains just by looking at the districts as they have been redistricted and the political leanings of those districts. You could predict that the Republicans would stay in charge. But what you see in these few competitive districts is very targeted spending. Mm-hmm. Some of it is coming from outside groups like Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce or the American Federation for Children, which is a pro-school choice group where they'll pick a race, they'll pour a bunch of money into it in terms of mailings and ads, and they'll bump somebody off or try to.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea there is more money, but in some cases, groups trying, I guess, to be more efficient with it to make sure they're getting a result for the money they spend?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's happened over the years is that elections have gotten to be a science. You can predict election results with astounding accuracy because of polling, because of redistricting, and you can look at the political composition of a district as it's measured by things like how people vote in a presidential race, and you can apply various computer metrics to these things and come up with highly accurate predictions. Wisconsin Public Television did a show about redistricting, and one of the segments looked at the predictions that were made by the consultant hired by the Republicans to analyze the the new maps. And they looked at 50 races in which Republicans had a challenger. And in those 50 races, if you looked at the actual result of the 2012 elections, those predictions were accurate on average to within one percentage point. Politicians are now able to pick their voters with astonishing accuracy.
But when all is said and done, there's the money and the redistricting you mentioned. Did Republicans, who won big all across the board, really, did they actually bring more voters to the polls when all was said and done?
Yes, they did. In 2012, the first election after redistricting, the Republicans were able to slightly increase their majorities in the state assembly and the state senate, even though they got fewer votes than Democrats. This time, they were able to slightly increase their majorities in both houses, but they did get more votes. than Democrats. They won on that level fair and square. More Republicans voted than Democrats overall.
Well, now turning to the legislative side, outside of the elections, what was the impact of money or the presence of money, as you saw it, on laws that passed or didn't pass the state legislature?
Well, I look at individual bills sometimes, and I try to find examples of how money is or isn't a factor in legislation. And so I talked to D.L. Schultz this year, and he said something astonishing about how money has taken over the political process. He talks about how these interest groups, now they show up with a bill drafted and they expect us to pass it without even thinking about it. He was talking about the mining bill in particular, but he's talking about the tremendous power of these outside groups, the special interests, who actually will be involved and take charge of the drafting of legislation, which then gets approved by the legislature. And I looked for bills that had the influence of money, the push of money behind them. One, for instance, was there was a change that was made as part of the state budget. A single legislator put into the budget bill language that would restrict the ability of local governments to reject cell phone towers and broadcast towers, like radio station towers. And so I looked at a particular community which had rejected a broadcast tower for aesthetic reasons and because of property values, and they just didn't like it. And a judge had heard a challenge of their decision and said they were right to reject it. Well, they can't reject it anymore because the budget bill language narrowed the ability of local governments to reject these towers to a single factor. It has to be health and safety reasons alone. Property values don't count. Aesthetics don't count. What the people want doesn't count. They can't use that as a basis for denying. So that's an example of a bill that seems to have come from an industry and changes the rules in the way that industry would want. You see it in some hot button issues like the wolf hunt. The groups that support wolf hunting in Wisconsin are powerful lobby groups. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on lobbying, and they've poured hundreds of thousands of dollars into the political process through campaign contributions over the years. And we have in Wisconsin until the wolf hunt was taken away by the federal judge decision, at least for now, Wisconsin was the only state in the country that allowed the use of dogs in wolf hunting. So arguably, a group like that has clout. And I wrote about how there's a program that will reimburse the owners of hunting dogs, of all animals, but including hunting dogs. Again, this is unique in the nation when they are killed by wolves, not if they're hunting wolves, but if they're bear hunting, for instance, and are killed by wolf, the state pays restitution to the owner of that animal. These are things that were obtained because somebody had an inside track with the legislature. They had the legislature's ear. And you see it with gun legislation, too. There was a gun background check bill introduced by Democrats. It didn't get a hearing. It didn't get debate. It was never brought up in any sense. It just was dead on arrival. This bill, according to a survey that was done by a couple of national media outlets, has like more than 90% support among the American public to do background checks on gun sales. Gun shows and sales between private individuals and internet sales and so forth. We had a case in Wisconsin where a shooter obtained a gun illegally. He was not allowed to purchase a gun, but went online and bought one and then used it to kill four people in 2012, the Brooklyn Spa shooting. We've had reason in Wisconsin to ponder the wisdom, perhaps, of a gun background check bill, but it would go nowhere here. There was another bill, which I spoke about on Central Time before, which is it would have increased the penalties for repeat offenders, people who break gun laws repeatedly. It would have toughened the penalties for them. That was a bill that had Republican support and went nowhere. It wasn't even introduced. They sent it out for co-sponsors, and they never even introduced it. The support was so tepid that they didn't dare. So you see sometimes that there seems to be a strong correlation between the clout of a certain interest groups and what's possible or impossible legislatively.
Are there any counterexamples, cloutless legislation that passed despite not having a powerful lobby?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's some issues in which there simply is no lobby. For instance, like voter ID, there's no lobby that comes out in support. No group says we really want to have voter ID or other restrictions on voting, like the restrictions on how close you can get to a voting table mm-hmm. or some of the things that have to do with when absentee voting. Those bills have passed without anyone coming and saying, hey, we think this is a great idea, and with lots of groups saying, we think it's a bad idea. So you see there that the legislature is not being motivated to act by any outside special interest. It may be motivated to act by an inside special interest, that being its own interest in manipulating the electoral process to its advantage. And then you have bills where a single individual can kill it. There was a legislation that was introduced that would have extended these drug and these treatment and diversion programs mm-hmm. to people with mental illness. Now they're available for people with substance abuse problems, but it would have extended it to people who are mentally ill. That bill passed the state assembly on a 99-0 vote. It was recommended for passage by the Joint Finance Committee by 15-0, and there was one state senator, Glenn Gross, who didn't like the bill, and it was his committee, and that was it. I mean, he killed it single-handedly. So that happens, too, that even bills with tremendous amount of support, bipartisan support, can't pass the legislature if there is an opponent.
As we wrap up, looking forward to 2015, no major partisan elections coming up, a Supreme Court election, Anne Walsh Bradley up for re-election. Do you expect to see a lot of money flowing around this one?
Yes, it will be a high-spending election, I would imagine, because they all have been. Mm-hmm. Our recent Supreme Court elections have been in the $5 million average range, which is a lot of money for an election between two people for one of these seats. They're not high turnout elections. There's a lot that is spent. I would expect that. You're going to see also, because this is not an election year but a state budget year, mm-hmm. the real spending is going to be on the lobby side. We're not going to see money being poured into political campaigns as prolifically, but we will see a lot of lobbying activity as groups mobilize to try to, you know, advance their causes and prevent bad things from happening.
All right, we'll leave it there for now, but I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about in 2015. Bill, thanks as always.
Thank you.
That was Bill Leaders, Money and Politics Editor for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, which collaborates with Wisconsin Public Radio and Television.